Here are the Rowing McLean brothers.
Those of you who've listened to me over the years know I have a particular love of talking to adventurers. I'd like to introduce you all in the audience to three of our world's great adventurers. They are from Scotland. They're brothers. This is Ewan, Jamie, and Lachlan McLean. They are between 26 and 33 years old. They join us from somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, where they are attempting to set a record in rowing the nearly 9,000 miles from Lima, Peru to Sydney, Australia. Hello, lads, and thank you for your time.
Hello, Norm. Thank you so much for having us on.
What an intro.
Yeah, best intro we've had. We need to get you.
we need you for every conversation we have.
So, who will be doing most of the talking and who's rowing while we're talking?
So you've got, I'm Jamie, middle brother. We've got Lachlan here. Ewan is on the oars currently. He's keeping the boat on its course. So Lachlan and I will take turns answering any questions and doing the talking.
That's great. Approximately where are you in the Pacific now?
So, Norm, we are currently, we've just passed Tonga, and we're in the South Pacific. We just passed Tonga, Fiji. We've actually probably just entered, we're very close to Fiji now. So we've passed one of the islands, and then, over the next kind of few hundred miles, we'll be hopefully leaving Fiji to the north of us, and then dipping down, and the next kind of big target is the island of New Caledonia off the coast of Australia.
Listeners should know that this isn't the first grand adventure in rowing for the McLean brothers. They have become the first three brothers to ever row across oceans. They're the youngest and the fastest ever to row from the Canary Islands to Antigua. So I've got to ask, people fall in love with gambling or jogging or cooking. How and when does this fascination with rowing begin?
Now, we did the Atlantic once, but we got those. It was three records that we broke in that crossing. It's a very good question. I think the Atlantic for us, you know, we didn't come from a background in rowing or doing this kind of thing. We're very much so just three ordinary brothers. We had our upbringing was in kind of the northwest of Scotland, where we our grandpa restored this little ruin in a place called Ascent, and we went there. We spent most of our childhoods up there, and there was no TV, there was no internet, there was no phone connection. So I think our kind of love for adventure and I suppose getting up to no good was founded there. We also, being on the coast, we had little boats that we'd go out, and you know, I remember one time in particular that we went out and the outboard, we had a little, it was like a open top, a boat called a
Drascombe Lugger,
there you go, and with a 4-horsepower engine. And we went out around the coast. I think I was about 5, Jamie was maybe 9, and Ewan was 11. And the outboard engine cut out, you know? And we started getting, you know, we were getting blown, you know, around the coast. And we had to row. We had to row all the way back in. And it took us, I think, 5-6 hours to come back in. Gee. And, you know, I've just seen a fin. There's a fin in front of me. Wow.
Let me stop you right there. Fins aren't necessary. Good news.
That is huge.
That's a big old
marlin behind us, Norm. Oh. I wish I could turn around. I wish I could show you. That's huge. Wow, it's about 5 feet long.
I hope it doesn't go for the rudder.
That is a big fish. Wow. Oh my goodness. It's getting really close.
Derailed the podcast.
This has derailed it. But yeah, we've actually...
Oh, there's a couple.
Oh, wow. That is huge. Anyway, sorry, it's about 10 feet away. We can see two fins. I can see its tip. I think it's one.
Just one massive.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like this. This is amazing. Anyway, we should focus back on the conversation. If I lurch awkwardly, it's because we've been speared by a marlin.
And I want to ask now about the boat. You've told us about what a special boat and special construction it is. But it also has a special name, the Rose Emily. Yeah. Would you tell us why you named your boat Rose Emily?
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, no, it's a name that's very close to all of our hearts. So between Lachlan and I, so I'm the middle brother. Ewan, who's on the oars, is the oldest brother. Lachlan's the youngest. Between Lachlan and I, our parents, they mum got pregnant and they were expecting a baby girl. And just tragically, very late on in the pregnancy, the child was lost. And you know, mum and dad, you know, she was going to be called Rose Emily McLean. And you know, that was obviously a really traumatic experience for mum in particular and dad as well. And yeah, we just wanted to, it's a tribute to her. It's a tribute to the sister that we never had. So yeah, the boat is called Rose Emily.
You've told us about how you turn basically salt water into fresh water. But let's talk food for a minute. You can't possibly be carrying enough food for 4 or 5 or 6 months at sea, can you?
I mean, amazingly, yes. When we left Lima, I have to say we were pretty low in the water. It was a bit touch and go. We had bags of food on deck, and it was right at the very limit. But no, we do. We have all the food we need for, you know, we managed to fit about 150 days worth of provisions on board. So that's our upper limit. And if it takes us longer than 150 days, then we're going to be relying on the fishing rod a bit more. But the food is, obviously we're rowing all day and all night. There's always someone on the oars. We're constantly exercising. And so obviously we have quite a high energy output. So we have to consume a lot of calories. So we're on about 6,000 calories each per day, give or take, depending on the conditions. And the majority of that is in the form of freeze-dried rations. So it's essentially space food. It's what NASA, I'm sure, you know, use to send into space. It's food that has had all of the water extracted in a freeze-drying process, which means it's incredibly light, but it holds all the nutritional value that the original food had. So we have these little metal, you know, they're like aluminium packets, food packets, and each meal is individually portioned up. And all you need to do is you add a certain amount of boiling water, leave it to rehydrate, and you've got yourself a delicious lamb sag or maybe a chicken curry.
Did you mention that we made the meals?
No, yeah, and so we actually, we, you know, having done the Atlantic, food for us three is such an important aspect to a challenge like this, because it's not only your fuel, but it's the critical ingredient to keeping morale high. You know, if you've got a good meal to look forward to at the end of the day or throughout the day, it's amazing the difference in all our spirits. And so we did the Atlantic, and we did, you know, we took store-bought freeze-dried food from reputable brands, and it was good, it was fine, it did the job. But having, you know, we swore after doing the Atlantic, we were like, if we do another row, we need to try and take some of our own home-cooked food. And that's what we did for the Pacific. We had a very chaotic week in our junior school, our old school kitchen, making about 1,000 meals worth of curries, stews, pastas, rice dishes, you name it. And
I don't want to be indelicate, but tell us about going to the bathroom.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a very sophisticated living environment, Norm. We've got an ensuite. There is a toilet on board. It is, you know, some would say it looks a lot like a bucket, but it's a very special bucket. It's got quite a thick rim, which you know, nice and comfortable to sit on. And to be honest, it's very challenging. It was very challenging because, you know, you're getting used to, we've had up to 20-foot waves and sitting on a bucket trying to go to the loo in those conditions is challenging. And, you know, you're hanging on with both hands either side of you to kind of keep you upright, because, you know, a spill of the bucket is the greatest offense. But no, I mean, now it's I would say it's part of the day that we look forward to, because it's one of the few moments that we just get to sit down. And you get to sit down for a few minutes and, you know, you lap it up, enjoy the view, and yeah, there you go. It's quite liberating. So maybe, I don't know, maybe not. I wouldn't, maybe it's not to advise listeners, but, you know, if they're struggling for a spare toilet, a bucket, you know, it does the trick. It's portable. You can carry it around with you.
What's night like out there on the ocean?
Yeah, I mean, you're so right, because it's actually where we've been for the majority of the crossing, it's actually been more night rowing than there has been day rowing. You know, we've got, it's about 10 to 11 hours of daylight and then 13 hours of darkness. I wouldn't say it's as enjoyable as the day. You know, some nights are really quite magical. You know, when you've got a clear sky, there's no cloud cover, and you've got the full view of, you know, the night sky with no light pollution whatsoever, and then a full moon rises and completely floods the boat with light, and it's really quite magical. But at the same time, you know, if you've got, you know, heavy cloud cover, it's so dark. It's completely pitch black, and we try and minimize the, you know, the number of lights on board the boat. You know, the only thing we can see is the auto helm readout, and even that we fade down at night. So it is completely pitch black. So, yeah, I mean, nights can be, you know, you're obviously, you know, us as humans, we're designed to be asleep when it's dark. And so all you really want to do when you're on your night shift is close your eyes and try and fall asleep. But, you know, we've got to keep the boat going. We've got to keep her on her course. So, yeah, the nights have been mixed. I'd say on the whole, really, really challenging and hard to get through. But it's part of a challenge like this, you know.
So, once this is completed, is there a next rowing challenge?
Well, you know, our kind of main priority, the goal is to raise £1 million, and we're currently at about 200,000, and it's starting to gather really good momentum. But the first priority for us is going to be hitting that target. So if we can raise £1 million, that will be
$1.8 million.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We're not sure what the conversion rate is, but yeah, it would be £1 million would be 40,000 people with clean water for life. So that's really why we're doing this, and we need to hit that target before we start planning another adventure. We are going to hold on to the boat because we've got such a connection with this boat. We've helped to build it. We've now done this crossing in her, and so, you know, there might be some more rowing. We'll see how we go. We'll see if our girlfriends will stay with us through another crossing. We'll see.
In other words, Norm, if we don't hit the £1 million target, we might just need to keep rowing. I don't know where we go. I don't know where we go from Sydney. I don't think we want to go south to Antarctica.
Well, where are you? We'll come to you.
Yeah, if that'll help.
Hey, you're welcome to come here. We've got a couple of extra spare rooms for you. Again, if you wish to donate, the website is the McLean, MacLean, the McLean Brothers.com. I have a final question for you guys.
Yeah.
Who's the best rower?
That's a good question.
That is a very good question. Probably Lachlan's the most built for a rower. You know, he's the longest. He's got the longest these long gangly limbs that rowers like to have, you know.
But I'd say, I don't know. I think I maybe in a 2K, I'd maybe have you. But I think in terms of long distance, I think you're probably stronger.
We all put in, you know, it's a funny thing, ocean rowing, because it's quite dissimilar. It's not that similar to river rowing in the sense that you're never really getting a perfect stroke. So, you know, the perfect physique to be an ocean rower, it's a mix. And I think that's why, you know, us as a team works quite well. We're all different sizes. You know, Ewan's the smallest, I'm the average one, Lachlan's the taller one. And I think we balance out in different conditions because, you know, the boat's constantly rocking about the place. You're getting one oar in one side, one the other. So I think, you know, having a mix is to our advantage.
Ewan's also great, Norm, because he's quite wee, and he's also an engineer.
He's a tech man.
So if there's an issue with the water maker, or, you know, we just send him into the hatch. It's kind of, you know, open up the hatch and send Ewan in. He's like a Swiss Army knife or a Leatherman. You know, you can throw him at any problem and he'll probably fix it.
That was great, guys. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. That was a really lovely conversation. You're an absolute pro.
They made it.
Did they do it in their time, like 100 and whatever?
150. They raised, I think, almost 900,000 pounds for water boreholes for fresh water in Madagascar.
Wow.
And you have no idea what that will mean for that country.
Yeah.
Just fresh water. But they made it, and what a hoot. Those guys were incredible.
Yeah, that's a lot of time spending with your brothers.
And you know,
nobody around.
I don't think on about day 120 of rowing the Pacific I'd have been that chipper.
No, sitting on buckets about three times a day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Corby, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, Norman, thank you so much for what you do for the Austin Street Shelter. It's awesome, man. You're a legend, my friend. You are.
Hey, it's really good being on the air with you.
Yes, once again, man. We'll do it again soon.
See you, Cobra.
All right, Norman.